Today's topic is an extremely sensitive one, and we're not obviously judging, God forbid, we never do. We're just here to learn, to open our eyes, and to understand as best as we can. In Judaism, there is a hierarchy of values. So, for example, when you have a conflict between two commandments or two principles, so you have to prioritize the one that has greater value. That's the meaning of a hierarchy. And one of the most important values in Judaism is the preservation of life. V'chai b'hem, a person should live Jewishly, and that means that in almost every circumstance, preservation of life supersedes other commandments. Even such an important observance as Shabbos is put aside for the sake of saving lives. However, the value of life is not a value per se as an end goal. The life that we live has itself a goal, a purpose, and that is bringing godliness into the world. And that means that the way that we conduct ourselves, the way that we live, if it's in accordance with that vision, so then that's fulfilling our ultimate purpose. But if someone is faced with a choice of living in a way that severely diminishes their godliness being manifest in the world, then in that context, their life is not worth living. And so there are a select few rules, a select few commandments in which we say, Yehoreg va'al ya'avor, a person should give up their life rather than violate those. And one of those is idolatry. Now, defining idolatry in a contemporary context is interesting and not so simple, because many of the faith communities in which we live are Christian denominations that have different interpretations of Christianity. So depending on exactly how you understand Christianity, that will determine whether or not you consider Christianity to be idolatry. And that might be different for Jews and for non-Jews, if you understand that it's some kind of partnership between different elements. But simply stated, on balance, for us, for Jews, we're going to assume that Christianity is the equivalent of idolatry. And so a person would be obligated to give up their life rather than convert to Christianity. That's the first premise. So these diminishments would be sexual impropriety of a specific nature, murder, or idolatrous practice. So now, in the context of the Holocaust, there were Jews who, due to the circumstance, made a choice to either actually convert to another religion and hide in that way, or pretend that they were converting to another religion, to Christianity, and hide in that way. Even though from a principle and practical standpoint, the Germans didn't care if you converted, but there were local, kind neighbors who, in these circumstances, if you were to convert, they would take you in for in various cases. So whether that's a convent or monasteries or just neighbors or all kinds of things, or if somebody was looked, I don't want to use stereotypes, but they presented in a way that they wouldn't appear to be Jewish. So perhaps pretending to be Christian is something that they could get away with, even in plain sight. And so this was a phenomenon which took place in different places in Europe. And it has legal consequences, ramifications. We've talked many times about the responsa of Rabbi Ephraim Oshri from Kovno. So he was faced with this dilemma of how to relate to these types of Jews who either did, may have, or appeared to have apostatized during the war, what happens to them post facto? Which is not the first time in Jewish history we've had what are called anusim, maranos, mm-hmm. from Spanish descent. The Rambam, Maimonides, is already dealing with them. But in the Holocaust, Rav Ashri has several responsa. One of them is regarding a sofer, a Jewish scribe, who took on a Christian identity during the war, and whether or not now that he's returning to the Jewish community, he's qualified to serve as a scribe. Another question he deals with is, it's a very difficult description. They came back and they uncovered a group of bodies in a certain place, and they came across a corpse that in the pocket of the man, there was a mezuzah with a note that says, "My name is so-and-so Ben so-and-so from Berlin." And he had a circumcision, and he was murdered, obviously, but he had a cross on his neck. Mm-hmm. So do we have to assume that the person apostatized or not? In this context, the question is regarding burial. Should he be buried together with other Jews? Because you don't bury Jews and non-Jews in the same cemetery. And there are other similar types of post-war questions. But the question that, from a Jewish law standpoint, needs to be addressed is a priori, pre facto, is it permitted for someone to totally, in their own heart, be fully committed to Judaism, but present themselves as if they were a Christian? So obviously, to accept Christianity is obviously that's Yehareg Ve'al Yavor. But this is the question. So this is an interesting age-old question. It does not appear in the Talmud Bavli, but it does appear in some older sources. And one of the most pointed places where this question arises is in the, let's say, in the area of Germany where Jews were dealing with, in the Middle Ages, dealing with different kinds of persecution, a question arose. Now, we don't know whether this question was asked to this rabbi or the rabbi actually wrote this question just for the purpose of writing the answer. But the question was raised by Rabbi Yisrael Isserlin, author of this volume of responsa called Trumas Hadeshen. It is a compilation of 354 questions, which is why it's called Trumas Hadeshen, the removal of the ashes. The word Deshen is Dalad Shinun, which comes to 354. So Rav Yisrael Isserlin, who Rav Yisrael ben Psachia, is living in the 14th century, 15th century in German communities, was asked, Yesh Medinos, there are countries, Shagozrin Rishe Ha'umos, that the wicked of those peoples, they decree Shelo Yavor Ben Brisbahem, that no Jew should pass through their land. Vasher Yimtza Daso Litovso Al Nafsho. If the person is caught, they would be killed. So, he wants to know, Rashai Ben Bris Lehishtanos, is it permissible for a Jew, Lehishtanot, to change their appearance? Lehizdamos Bebegodav, to appear in your clothing, Legoy, as a Gentile. O Laleches Begili Harosh, to go without a head covering, to walk around bareheaded, Kemo Agoyim Kadesh Luyaki Ruhu Olo, that the person should be disguised. This is the question. So what is at the heart of this question? The heart of this question is, to what extent do we expand the definition of idolatry? We know that idolatry, as are the other two of the three cardinal sins, are not limited just to a specific practice, a specific violation of the worship itself. It includes other ancillary practices. Well, how far does that go? What is included, a halachic term is called avizrayu, ancillary elements of idol worship. Do you say that presenting yourself as a Christian itself constitutes some form of connection to Christianity? Even if the person themselves, of course, has no intention or interest. So what's interesting here is that in this response, of this is 700 years old, the Trumas HaDeshen is not certain.
No.
He says, Yeroe, it seems to me, Tzarech ledaktik b'davar. You have to look into this very carefully. And he goes back and forth. He says, one question is, what's the context? Is there religious persecution or is it not persecution? Is it for financial gain or for keeping your life alive? What if they figure you out or they don't? Does it depend on that? He quotes the Or Zeruah, one of the earlier opinions, which quotes two opinions in the Yerushalmi. He says the concluding line is this: Tzarek ledakdek yafeh. You have to be very careful, bedvarim halalu, in these things. Shelo yiye nire, that it should not be perceived, kemode ba'avodah zara, that you accept idol worship. Shekol amode ba ki ilu kofer b'chol haTorah kula. Anybody who accepts idolatry is as if they are abandoning, rejecting the entirety of the Torah. This is the Trumas HaDeshen context. That's correct.
Even though it's well known that this person is not.
That's right.
From the community.
Good. So that is an argument which is going to be raised in a later context. It's a suggestion. What do people know? But it doesn't seem that that is the issue that he's concerned with. Everyone knows, as in the Jewish community, they know he's Jewish. But he's passing off as not Jewish.
And jumping forward, so if this is something that we're going to get to in 15 minutes, there seems to be, to me in my head, there's a question between adults and children.
We're only going to speak about adults who make their own decisions.
Right, because children could open a whole other conversation.
Correct.
About intent.
Yes. Yeah.
Children didn't make their choice.
Yeah, we're only talking about adults who have their own.
Yes.
Yeah, but children aren't held liable. So,
what?
Children aren't liable, meaning they're minors.
No.
So they're obviously whatever choice they made, whether it was the right or wrong choice, they were children. We're asking, if you were an adult, what would you do? What should you do?
Or giving
one's child away? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. According to the Shulchan Aruch, let's start with that. You're not allowed to say here in Kuf Nun Zayin Beis that you are a Gentile. But, he says, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you can change your appearance that they won't recognize you. And the Rama is adding that even though you're not allowed to say that you are a non-Jew, a idol worshiper, you are allowed to say something which can be interpreted in different ways, open to interpretation. To rephrase this, it's not about whether you intend and premeditate the plan. The question is, certainly for the Rama, am I making a declaration that I am not Jewish? Or, the Shulchan Aruch would say, if you dress up in some way, that's not the same as a declaration.
But not all declarations might. A declaration can be made and not be heartfelt.
That's the point. It doesn't matter if it's heartfelt.
It
does not matter. If exactly. Why would that be? Because this is going to be considered, according to the Shulchan Aruch and according to the Rama, not according to everyone, but this is going to be considered the equivalent of the umbrella of idolatry. So now, we take a look at one of two responsa of Rav Oshri that's more prescriptive. So take a look at the orange paper that you have, the yellow paper, yellow. It's two-sided. This is a short responsum. There is a much longer responsum in the fifth volume, and for a discussion about that, that was a question of a person who had a passport And the way to save themselves with that passport was to write the letters RK on it, which indicated that that person was Catholic, Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. Is that permitted? So Rav Oshri has a long response on this, and I sent out the article on the email in the tradition and volume 46, number 3, in the fall 2013 edition. It's a fascinating article for Rabbi Akiva Mails on passing for a Christian during the Holocaust, a new look at Rabbi Ephraim Oshri's responsa. He deconstructs this responsum, which is like 12 pages long. It's unusually long, and points out that the responsum differs from when Rabbi Oshri originally wrote it in the 40s to when he re-expanded it to be published in the 70s, which is a whole discussion in and of itself, which is not for today. But the second argument that Rav Oshri points out is that the letters RK can be interpreted in different ways. And therefore, Rav Oshri thinks that it would be permitted in the second explanation to print RK on the passport, because RK could mean lots of different things. But now look at the yellow sheet. This is in Siman Tesvav, Bedin Hatzolas Atzmo Ayadei Teudas Akum. The question came on the following day, Biyom Aleph Nisan, on the first day of Nisan. So that's coming up in a few weeks. But this was in Tuf Shin Beis, 1942. Nishalti begeto kovna. I was asked in the kovno ghetto, im muter lo la'adam, if a person is permitted, lahatzil es atzmo ayadei kinias tuudas his nazrus, which is called a topshein. A topshein is a baptismal document. And by showing that baptismal document, the person will save their life. The person will have the possibility to flee to the forest and to join the partisans. Yeah?
Presuming the baptismal doctrine was authentic, or is it suggesting that if you can come up with a fake baptismal doctrine?
Either way.
So if you were baptized...
The person was not baptized. They were totally Jewish. They just want to buy or steal or produce a baptismal certificate to present themselves as if they are not Jewish.
Right.
Is that permitted?
But there would be a difference between converting.
Yes. But you're not converting. You're not converting.
This is just pretending.
Just pretending.
Pretending on both sides.
Meaning? When you get to the pardons. Right.
So it wouldn't be recognized as a baptism in the Catholic Church.
It might. Why wouldn't it?
Because he didn't go through baptism.
They don't know the difference.
Right.
How do they know?
Right. But I'm saying, like, if you took it to the church, the issuing, like, there were a lot of priests that issued these fake baptismal certificates without ever going through.
True, but as a matter of policy, they should recognize it because it's a baptismal certificate. And it wasn't just going on in Kovno. This question didn't just come up in Kovno. So there is a small volume called Yerushas HaPleta. Yerushas HaPleta literally means the inheritance of the remain, the remainder, which is a collection of responsa from Hungarian rabbis that most of them were killed in 1944, which I'm holding one of them. This group of survivors originally from Budapest, after the war, published some of these letters. One of the letters is in Simon Chav Zion, in the 27th entry, is from none other than Rav Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal, the author of the Eim HaBonim Smecha, the Hungarian prominent rabbi, who was asked regarding Al Devar HaSheila Be'inyan Knias Toipshein. He was asked in Hungary about procuring these baptismal certificates. And he says, when I was in Pressburg, we had a discussion about this, about the Toipshein, and whether or not people who had procured such documents were permitted to receive an aliyah at the Torah in shul. But he says, in his opinion, it is absolutely prohibited. It is prohibited. And that is what we are going to see exactly in the words of Rav Oshri. And we're not judging, but this is not the only view. But what's interesting is the facts that when Rav Oshri was faced with this question, he tells you in this tshuva, you have the entire thing. It's one tshuva on both sides of your yellow page, and we'll go through it so you can see what he said. And I'm not saying that everyone ruled this way. We don't have a ton of documentation because most of these rulings are given orally, and most of those people didn't survive the rabbinic personalities. But we have a few, and this is one of them, and this is one of the most important. So, yeah.
I think with some of the things we've discussed here, we see as the war progresses and as the enemy, the goal of the enemy becomes clearer, there is a switch.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case here. I don't think this is context dependent. You'll see. And you'll see why.
I thought in Ringelblum I had read that there was a documentation of like when after the ghetto, the big liquidation of a switch. But I don't know if it was necessarily.
So like I would say like this. Yeah. So I would say like this. We talked about that switch, that shift already going 1942 into 1943, we saw that switch more in the context of the attitude towards armed resistance. But here, I want to see the document inside before we take any more questions. I want to see what he offers point by point to explain why it is that in his view that this is prohibited. And there is an interesting application today, which I have the magazine, I sent out the article last night, that Rabbi Ari Leibowitz discusses how this affects students who are studying in campuses where they're struggling with anti-Semitism. Do they have to be concerned about presenting themselves and disguising themselves in certain ways? How definitely relevant, and he uses many of the sources that are going to be brought here. Not the first one, because this one is unique to our discussion, although he's not the only one, of course, who brings it, Rav Oshri. Rav Oshri says, I want you to see what it says in Maimonides. I don't have this in English, only in the Hebrew, so I'm going to summarize it. Where there is a mitzvah called Kiddush Hashem. Mm-hmm. What is Kiddush Hashem? So it means different things. It means, obviously, to act as you live in a way which is in consonance with godliness. But it also means, in certain contexts, to give up your life. And, says Maimonides, we are responsible, we are obligated to give up our lives for the unity of God, even though they are coercing us against our will, and we're not intending to accept it. Says Rav Oshri, it's clear from this guidance from the Rambam, from Maimonides, that a person is chayav adam limsor atzmo lemisa, a person has to give themselves up to be killed, and you cannot present as if you are denying God, even if belibo, even if in your heart, you absolutely believe. The Rambam's language is nimsor atzmenu lemisa, we should give ourselves over to death, velo nateu lachshov shekafarnu, and not to give the impression that we are denying our God. So now Rav Oshri is going to apply that to the case of the baptismal certificate. He says, what are you conveying when you present a baptismal certificate?
That you have rejected Judaism and you are accepting a different religion.
Exactly. Is that ambiguous? Are there other ways to interpret that document?
Well,
No.
Well, for example,
yeah.
If you go, I want to go to some, if you go to the parties, for example, they have the idea
okay.
of saving life.
Good. So, again, in the context of an uprising and killing, you also have to think about what are the conditions and whether it's permitted or not. But what's interesting about this is that he says that by presenting this document, you are making a statement. Now, you could have said, I'm not speaking, but it doesn't matter. He says in the third paragraph here on the front side, the whole entirety of this document is to present as if the person had given up their religion. So what about the idea, one second, what about the argument, go to the last paragraph, what about the argument that if we're doing something that the Ramah said just to, misrepresent yourself? So he says on the last line, to custom over there in the Ramah, kol hatam shalaheter, all the leniency, umipnei shehu omer, davar shemishtamei alashneiponim. He says the Ramah is saying that you are doing something or saying something which is ambiguous. And so there's nothing, let's say, even in the case of the disguise could be understood in different ways. I don't know, maybe even though the Chumash Hadeshin might not like this, but the Ramah might say, let's say a person's not wearing a kippah. They're not wearing a kippah. Maybe it blew off. Maybe they lost it. Maybe they forgot it. Maybe they never learned they have to wear a kippah. So at least in that context, you could argue that it's open to interpretation. But says Rav Oshri, in this case, and I would say this session is probably going to be one of the biggest downers of all the last 8 years of discussions, because it's extremely challenging. It's very draconian. But he says, Benidon Didon, in our case, it's not so. The indication of this certificate is only one interpretation. Vehi, and that is, I'm on the back page, I'm reading in the Hebrew, Shebal ha-tu'uda, that the person who has this certificate, Azav chas v'shalom, God, he abandoned God and denies his Jewish identity. And he says, this is prohibited even if you believe in your heart. Nonetheless, he says, mitzvah u'al kiddush Hashem, he is obligated, like the Rambam says, to give up your life. And he concludes, take a look in the second to last paragraph. There was a great sage named Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen of Radin, Rav Yisrael Meir Kagan, called the Chavetz Chaim. He quotes from the Chavetz Chaim, Sefer Nidche Yisrael. Even to say, the Chavetz Chaim said, even to say that you are not Jewish is a problem. Certainly, to buy a tu'uda. If someone were to ask you, would say, you're obligated to give up your life. Tavna ladina, then we'll take questions in a second. Tavna comes out, she'ein shum heter klal. There is absolutely no leniency at all. Benidon dinan, in our circumstance, lirchosh tu'udas hitz nazrus ushmad. This type of document that would speak to converting, even though afshu choshiv shaydeze yatzlech linatzel, rather a person is mitzuvahu lekadosh es Hashem, he is obligated to sanctify God's name, as it says in the pasuk, in the verse, I'll be sanctified among the Jews. So one coda, which is in a different tshuva in Yud Beis, he says, what about somebody who had, he doesn't tell you the name. He just says, Shin Aleph. I think he didn't want to embarrass the person. He said, this person had papers, and the papers, he bought these Christian papers, and they were able to hide among the Germans. But, the man says, he never used the papers. He bought them, but he never presented them to any way to hide his Judaism. So he wants to know, this person wants to know, does the purchasing of the papers make him into this category of an apostate? Or do we say he doesn't have the status as a mumar, as an apostate, because while he was in hiding, he was still observing all of the practices? And the practical nafkamina, the practical resolution of this, is whether or not the person is required to undergo the formal reacceptance process that would happen if you had an actual apostate or not. But the point that this raises is that just the purchasing of the documents themselves, even the lack of presenting the documents, already raises this possibility. It's a question of apostasy. So I'll take questions in 1 second. But just, I think, to realize the heightened challenge that these people were facing, but then also the way that they had to deal with it subsequently afterwards, you know, these are very serious issues. And I think it's important to be aware that in every circumstance, Judaism and the halacha and Jewish law has something to say, even if it's not always going to be something pleasant, something that we would be looking for.